This is WPRB Princeton, New Jersey, 103.3 FM, community supported independent radio. Now at 5 p.m., it's WPRB News and Culture. And I'm your host, Natalie Hahn. Secrets, the whispered confidences, the hidden truths, the mysteries lurking just beneath the surface. They're the threads that weave through the fabric of our lives, binding us to the unknown and the untold. Like treasures buried deep within a labyrinth, secrets beckon us to unravel their mysteries, to decipher their significance. But in the shadows of secrecy, there's a certain allure, a tantalizing dance between revelation and concealment. What compels us to keep secrets, and what drives us to uncover them? Join us today on WPRB News and Culture as we embark on a journey into the corridors of the human psyche, exploring the power and potency of secrets in shaping our lives and our world. Welcome to the Labyrinth of Secrets. First up, we have Navani Rachumalu and Alvaro Basso speak with Caitlin Rizzo, an archivist at the Institute for Advanced Study in Princeton, to talk about the role of secrecy in her work, and why seeing the archivist as a professional secret keeper may do more harm than good. Next up, Stephanie Yen speaks to multiple fast food chain workers, inquiring about the special secret menus that have grown in popularity over the past few years. What is exactly with this secret menu? And in our last story, Sophie Lahenny and Natalie Hahn read out listener submission secrets and discuss what they might mean. Stick around, we'll be right back.
WPRB wants you to know about Mural Arts Philadelphia. Mural Arts Philadelphia, the nation's largest public art program, exists to provide transformative experiences, progressive public discourse, and economic stimulus to the city of Philadelphia through participatory public art that beautifies, advocacy that inspires, and educational programming and employment opportunities that empower. Take a tour and hear some of the stories behind more than 4,000 murals that grace our city. Learn more by following at Mural Arts on Twitter and Instagram and by visiting muralarts.org. This has been a public service announcement from WPRB Princeton, community-supported independent radio.
Listening to WPRB News and Culture. First up, we have Navani Rachumalu and Alvaro Basso speak with Caitlin Rizzo, an archivist at the Institute for Advanced Study in Princeton, to talk about the role of secrecy in her work, and why seeing the archivist as a professional secret keeper may do more harm than good.
My name is Caitlin Rizzo, and I am the archivist for the Shelby White and Leon Levy Archive Center at the Institute for Advanced Study. And what that means I do is sustain the history and the documentation around the history for the Institute's community of scholars.
Today we talked to Caitlin, the archivist at the Institute for Advanced Study, about the role of archivists. When we got there, it was tea time for all the scholars, who were all mingling with each other over some delicious cookies and an assortment of coffees and teas. Not a cell phone was in sight.
We walked through the Institute's library to meet up with Caitlin. While we initially thought of this role as a professional secret keeper, we reached out to archivists in the area, and upon talking to Caitlin, she gave us a new perspective on how archivists are actually community builders, instead of people who lock away information and keep archives out of sight.
Before the interview, Caitlin was showing us pieces from the archive, and many important figures jumped out to us, like Einstein, von Neumann, and Oppenheimer, whose research on the atomic bomb had to remain under secrecy during his stay at the IAS, as seen in the recent popular film by Christopher Nolan.
And for anyone who's not familiar with the Institute for Advanced Study, what we do is support curiosity-driven research at the highest levels. So we have a school of mathematics, a school of natural sciences, a school of historical studies, and a school of social science.
But these archives are much more than rare artifacts and documents that are kept from the public, but are very meaningful to the researchers and the community at the Institute and beyond.
The people who care about this history the most are often the people who are here at the Institute and who live this history every day. You know, their office is the office next to the Einstein office, or, you know, we have offices on campus called the Weil office or the von Neumann office. One thing that I find really interesting coming to the Institute and working with so many mathematicians for the first time is just how interested the mathematicians are in the history of their subject, in knowing who thought of this idea in geometry for the first time. Where did this theory come from? And our scholars really derive great joy from that, and I think derive great meaning from that.
Caitlin then talked about some of the tensions and differences between historians and archivists, and the importance of sharing these special collections with scholars that will put them to use.
It's hard to call something lost when someone has made a guide saying, this is the name of this object, and here it is in this box, in this storage, you know, unit in our archive. It wasn't lost so much as we didn't know how important it was until we had properly contextualized it, which is the difference maybe between historian and archivist, as archivists would understand it, right? My job is less interpretation of the historical record and more maintenance of or stewardship, custodianship is the way I like to think about it. And stewardship, particularly in the way that stewardship connotes caretaking.
She also made sure to mention how archivists may sometimes be neglected, even though they are extremely essential to the research process.
You discovered something when someone else has told you exactly where it is. It's like when your mom tells you there's Pop-Tarts in the cabinet and you go in later having forgotten that there's Pop-Tarts. And aha, I discovered the last Pop-Tarts. No, your mom bought those Pop-Tarts and she put them there for you. That actually took a lot of care and maintenance. And somebody was looking out for you and doing a lot of labor.
And there's also a gender dynamic to this issue.
There's an old historian term for archivists, the handmaidens of history, that kind of speaks to the way that the gendering of librarians as and care workers generally as women has added to this idea that archivists and librarians are just, you know, people who take care of boxes or are care workers in a way that is insignificant, and the historians are doing the intellectual labor in a way that is more significant. That has become problematic over the years, right? It kind of rubs and creates this friction between the two fields that are actually quite complementary.
Of course, it is vital to understand the importance of archivists and all the hard work they put into cataloging and preserving important materials. So, is it fair to call them secret keepers?
The bristling at the idea of being a secret keeper is it's kind of ignoring all of the the infrastructural labor, the maintenance labor that goes into our jobs, and giving the moment of discovery to someone else. So it's not being secretive, it's actually being quite particular about how to make it open.
Historically, archives have been seen as a sign of status for those who have special collections filled with rare artifacts. But Caitlin tries to push against this status quo.
It goes back to the earliest roots of collecting. So very early in collecting, we had something called Wundercommen or Wonder Boxes. We had relics, if you think about early church collecting, or, you know, mystical collecting. So things like unicorn horns, people collected things that they thought were like that to hold power over other people, so status symbols. I think that when we think about secretive collecting or treasure collecting, collecting things like that, we think of status symbols. And that has its place in society. It's just not the kind of archivist that I aspire to be, personally. I am very happy to be an archivist that works with my community, and that sense of community and growth and connection to the community, I think, is really powerful.
But as an archivist, Caitlin encounters plenty of documents, and she doesn't know when or if they will be seen or how people want to use them.
The things that I think, maybe with my archivist brain, my trained brain, are of research value, aren't of importance for researchers, maybe that needs to be turned off sometimes, because maybe what I think is research won't be what research is.
Despite this challenge, Caitlin values the continuous learning that she undertakes as an archivist.
I think you're constantly learning and unlearning how to make those decisions about what is secret.
From WPRB News and Culture, this has been Navani Ratchamalu
and Alvaro Basso. Stay curious.
You're listening to WPRB News and Culture. Next up, Stephanie Yen speaks to multiple fast food chain workers, inquiring about the special secret menus that have grown in popularity over the past few years. What is exactly with this secret menu?
Today, we're unraveling the mystery of secret menus. A secret menu is a selection of unadvertised food or drink items, often reserved for those in the know. Secret menus, which often come as exciting surprises when discovered by customers, have redefined the way we experience and interact with any place serving food or drink, especially fast food chains. Perhaps one of the most popular chains to incorporate the secret menu tactic has been Starbucks, with its multitude of colorful drinks.
Dragon drink.
Mango dragon fruit.
Coconut milk.
Dragon fruit.
Ice.
And watch the change in color.
I will be glimpsing into the enigmatic world of off-the-menu items in an attempt to answer the following questions. How secret really are these secret menus? What types of items do they contain? and what type of information can employees share about them. First, I visited a coffee shop local to Princeton, New Jersey, Sacred Coffee Roasters. I ordered right as the crowd was thinning out before the closing time of 5 p.m., thinking that if there was ever a good time for them to divulge secrets, it would be then.
They used to have like a honey cinnamon latte, but like, not really, there's not really, I guess like we have like a seasonal latte right now, it's a rose latte. So what do you think?
Yeah, we don't have like any secret menu at all. Yeah.
But sometimes we'll have like a random like fun drink, like there was an orange mocha earlier, so.
Yeah, which you can get at the other location.
Yeah. Okay. Next time you come, ask.
Okay, I will ask about that.
According to the friendly baristas, Sacred does not have a secret menu, nor does it sound like they will be making one. Still, I have personally not seen Sacred publicly advertise the drinks that they mentioned, like the honey cinnamon latte and the orange mocha. So maybe there is a de facto secret menu after all, wherein knowledge of fun and seasonal drinks is reserved for the most engaged and loyal customers. Next, I visited a local franchise of Wawa, a multi-state fast food chain. Besides being bombarded with recent advertisements about Wawa's pizzas, I had not recalled seeing or hearing about special items on Wawa's menu, so I had to go check for myself.
I didn't order, but I have a quick question about the menu.
Yeah.
Are you aware of if Wawa has any secret menu items?
No.
Nothing exclusive?
No.
Okay.
Nothing that you hit two things and it pops
up. Awesome, like, so you just have to order what's on there. Okay.
Correct.
Thank you.
The employee was straight and direct. Wawa has nothing to hide, which makes sense if you consider its role as a quick grab-and-go establishment.
Thank you for calling In-N-Out Burgers Customer Service Department.
Lastly, I called In-N-Out, which is a prime example of a fast food chain with a secret menu. You've likely heard of their animal-style fries, for example.
Hi, I'm calling to ask about In-N-Out's secret menu items.
If you actually go on our website, it's inandout.com. Mm-hmm. We actually have a menu section with a section that we call our not-so-secret menu, and it has our items listed on it. As far as ingredients for like our animal fries, it's just the fries, two pieces of melted cheese, grilled onion, and bread.
And do you know the history and origin of the secret menu?
Not particularly. Each one has like a different story, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But I don't know exactly when they came along. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Have a good day.
I'm checking the not-so-secret menu which the customer service associate just mentioned to me, and the top says the following. Urban myth or just plain excellent customer service? Okay, you've heard the rumors, wondered what was on it, maybe even felt a little out of the loop. But in reality, we don't have any secrets at all. So there are a few things to learn here. As it turns out, In-N-Out's secret menu isn't so secret, suggesting that items familiar to the layperson, like animal fries, have been orchestrated as under the covers and spread via word of mouth all along. It is true that you have to do some digging yourself, though. For one, not everyone knows that In-N-Out has an official not-so-secret menu website page in the first place. I didn't. Plus, the page only features six of the most popular items on that menu. The internet suggests that there are a lot more, including items named the Flying Dutchman and Lemon Pepper Fries. There is definitely an element of exclusivity and excitement in searching for a random item and ordering it in person too. Unfortunately, I am located in New Jersey right now, where In-N-Out does not exist. Lastly, perhaps one aspect does remain unknowable, or at least enshrouded in myth and mystery. The employee which I called didn't know the history and origin of the secret menu, implying that In-N-Out does not formally share or disperse this information even amongst employees. If you look up the story behind In-N-Out's animal-style fries, you'll see multiple sources stating that the secret menu dates back to the 1960s, with the animal-style name coming from the nicknaming of rowdy customers as animals. So take that as you will. Based on my experiences with Sacred, Wawa, and In-N-Out, it appears to me that secret menus, or the lack thereof, correlate with the very character of the establishment behind the menu. While Sacred does not have an official secret menu, its status as a local coffee shop makes it easy for customers and baristas to experiment and customize existing options. From the perspective of Wawa, it makes sense, in terms of both efficiency and economics, to stick with a straightforward menu. A few clicks and you have your food. Finally, In-N-Out's secret menu items seem to have sprouted from various customizations requested by customers over time, which have stuck around and have since spread primarily through word of mouth and social media. If anything, this dive into secret menus and the air of exclusivity around them has taught me that they are less secret than anticipated. Besides the fact that secret menus are made public online, whether through official websites or informal blogs, all the employees which I spoke with knew what it meant when I referred to a secret menu. And I felt that, as long as I asked nicely, they could easily customize an item for me. In conclusion, food and drink establishments are not hiding many secrets about their menus. If you want to know, we'll probably just have to ask.
WPRB wants you to know about Table to Table. They are a community-based food rescue program in northern New Jersey that collects fresh and perishable food that would otherwise be wasted and delivers it to organizations that serve the hungry in Bergen, Essex, Hudson, and Passaic counties. They rescue this healthy food from about 150 donors, supermarkets, food distributors, restaurants, and commercial kitchens, and deliver it the same day, free of charge, to over 250 community organizations, including food pantries, shelters, daycare and after-school programs, senior adult centers, and programs serving the working poor. And they need your help. To find out how you can support their amazing work or get involved, please visit tabletotable.org. This has been a public service announcement from WPRB Princeton, community-supported independent radio.
You're listening to WPRB News and Culture. And in our last story, Sophie Lahenny and Natalie Hahn read out listener submission secrets and discuss what they might mean.
So we have some listener submissions on secrets that people need to get off their chest.
Yeah, and we're excited to share them with you today.
Yeah. The first one we have is a love confession. I feel like a lot of secrets are...
I think that's a very popular vein for secrets. Like, why don't I confess my love to somebody? I guess that's, like, the most interesting thing. It's, like, the same reason why a lot of, like, songs are about love. It's, like, well, if there's something worth writing about. I also think that, like, something feels more serious if it's about big emotions. You know, like,
that's
something...
That's a good
point. I'm sure there are many things in people's lives that they just, like, haven't told anybody. But when it's something about, like, feelings, it feels so much larger and therefore so much more important and like warrants the label of like secret versus like I don't know fact or just comment. So to start us off, the secret begins with, I have to confess that I'm madly in love with my teacher, but he keeps flirting with this other guy in the class. I've been in his class twice and go to his office hours every week, but I'm scared to say that I like him, even though we've had a very personal connection, like about my family history and trauma, and about his ex-wives and relationships with gay men in New York. It feels wrong to tell him I like him, but I think he likes me too.
Okay, so first, let's clarify that this teacher is presumably, like, not...
Yeah. That much older.
Yeah.
Because I think it's... The implication is that they're, like, a student teacher.
Right, exactly. But, yeah, I find this secret, like, interesting. I wonder if the person who submitted this has told anyone else.
I feel like that's the thing with secrets like this. It's, like, they probably have. Because, like, that's, like, kind of the appeal of, like, secrets related to love and feelings mm. and should I tell. Like, if you end it with, like, I feel like he likes me too, I feel like it's wrong to tell him, I think that implies that it's been thought about a lot.
Right.
Like, the secret has, somebody's put a lot of work in thinking about the secret. And a lot of times, if you're, like, thinking about a secret, you usually do it with another person. Like, I don't know if that's something everybody does, but I think a lot of the times, like, things that in my life that I would consider, like, secrets are not, like, secrets I think my friends know, like, my roommates know. It's, like, they're considered secrets because they feel huge and maybe, like, the person involved doesn't know. But it's, like, because they are feel important emotionally, they've been, like, discussed and dissected with
interesting
other people.
I feel like for me, a lot of, like, love-related secrets that I've had or that my friends have had have actually been, like, kept secret only to themselves for very long periods of time. I also think that different people...
You mean, like, to the person with the secret or to the person, like, the object of the secret?
It's just, like, someone, like, has a crush or something and they won't even tell their friends.
Oh, wow. That's
yeah.
impressive.
Yeah, I think... I mean, I think it depends on the person. I know some people who, like... I know some people who also, like... They want to tell, like, they want to spill their business to everyone. Like, they mm-hmm. love telling people secrets, so much so that, like, it's not a secret anymore.
Yeah.
But there's something, like, intimate about telling someone something that should be a secret. And I think sometimes, or I know some people who, like, don't overdo it, but just, like, love doing it.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think also there are, like, some stories that become, like, that story. It's, like, if you want to foster that connection with somebody,
mm-hmm.
oh, I'm telling them something
yeah.
deep, something meaningful, something personal, like, I'm facilitating that, like, bond with
yeah.
another person. It's, like, you have that story, which is, like, not really a secret because it's been told so many times, but
mm-hmm.
it's, like, that's where it's, like, a little bit embarrassing
mm-hmm.
or, like, a little bit revealing.
Mm. Yeah.
And that becomes, like, your go-to, like, bonding story.
Yeah, yeah.
But it could very much be, like, a secret. It could have been a secret.
Right. I agree. I think, like, to oppose that idea, there's also, like, the secret between two people, like, between best friends.
Yeah.
And...
Do you think that's a gendered thing, though? Like, I was talking to a friend of mine who's a guy, and he was, like, he's, like, why, asking me, like, why do girls feel the need to, like, share all of this, like, in very intimate details of, like, their personal life, their relationships, like, with other women. Like, do you think there's something gendered about it, or do you think that's just...
I think so. I think there's this sense of, like, female bonds and, like, secret sharing.
Yeah.
I think that's definitely a common trope in media, in my life, in, like, other people I know. Yeah, I don't know. It's weird.
Interesting.
BenSound.com.
Okay, so our next submission comes from someone who said that their brother-in-law is really close friends with the secret daughter of an extremely famous international politician. And the reason that it's being kept a secret is because the daughter is, like, from a relationship with another woman.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, wow. So it's, like, nobody knows.
Nobody knows.
That's her father?
Yeah. I mean, obviously she does.
She knows, like, and I'm sure her, like, mother knows.
Yeah, and, like, she's told, I guess, some of her friends.
And does, like, the politician, like, pay to keep it a secret or something?
I don't know. That's actually a great question. Like, as a politician, I wonder, I mean, there are definitely people who would be invested in, like, this politician's downfall, right?
Yeah. Oh, that's crazy. Wow,
yeah.
Wait a second.
It's so, and also, it's just, like, this person who submitted the secret, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's their brother-in-law that's friends with the daughter. So
this has gone through many.
This has already gone through a few people. Like, yeah. How does she feel comfortable telling people? And also, yeah. Like, maybe this, the person who submitted, like, they know that the daughter exists but doesn't know any details. But maybe they do know details.
Maybe has never met
her before. Yeah, and it's just like
brother-in-law is kind of a distant connection,
right? Like, but it's like, who can you trust to keep your secrets? And like,
that's a great point, because I guess it's like brother-in-law feels so distant from like the individual who submitted the secret, because mm-hmm. it's like, it's not your sibling, but it's like your sibling's spouse,
right?
And unless they're like really close, it probably is that like it came up at like a family event,
yeah,
and brother-in-law was haha, like, let me tell you this
mm-hmm.
about my friend. And so I guess like it's crazy how many people actually know this mm-hmm. like, and if so many people know, like, what's the fear in more people? Like, how big of a politician, like, how big, like, would the consequences mm-hmm. be if more people found out?
Oh, 100%. And, like,
I think his wife knows.
Oh, I think she must. Right? I mean...
Yeah, I don't know. Like...
Yeah, I mean, we are talking about a politician.
We're talking about, like, yeah, I'm just saying. Like, I think there are people can go to quite large lengths to, like...
That's true.
Keep secrets like that. I'm sure people, like... There are stories all the time of people having, like, whole secret families.
That's true.
And, like, you find out after, like, somebody's death that they had, like, a second family mm-hmm. somewhere. Mm-hmm. And that's crazy. I mean, imagine the time and effort it takes to, like, maintain a second family completely hidden from another. But, like, I'm sure people have gone to great lengths to keep this secret.
Definitely.
And it's interesting that it, like, kind of just slipped out here. Mm-hmm. Like, so it's like, despite those great lengths, there are clearly, like, very large cracks.
Right. All the way to WPRB News and Culture.
Wow.
Kind of in that vein, the next submission is on a much smaller scale in terms of the world, but comes from a submission that says that she knows that one of her sorority sisters hooked up with her big's boyfriend.
Oh, that's so
right. Tough. And it's like, what do you say at that point?
Yeah.
You know?
I don't know. Like, I tend to sway in favor of, like, saying something. Like, I've never been in that situation, so I don't know I don't know how I'd feel in a moment, but, like, that's such a tough situation to be in.
I agree. I think what's even tougher is, like, this person was just talking about her friend, right? But, like, if you're friends with, like, both parties.
Yeah.
Both, like, the person who's cheating and the person who's being cheated on, and, like, who are you loyal to, or, like, what is the right thing to do?
Yeah, particularly if it'll, like, destroy their relationship.
Yeah, or if it could destroy your friendship with one of them.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah.
I feel like she should tell, you know? Like, I do, but I think also I had to be swayed by, like, a morality where it's just, like, honesty is the best policy in every situation.
Right.
And I don't know if that actually holds up in practice. It's just, like, in the small scale, that is my life,
mm-hmm.
where nothing major or dramatic is, like, there are no politicians scheming or anything. Like, usually telling somebody ends up with the best result.
Yeah. It's interesting, though, because we're in the context of a sorority, right? So, like,
yeah.
There might be, like, social pressures
mm-hmm.
from different sides. Like, we don't know what the full social dynamic is, and that yeah. could really...
I think that's
interesting.
Yeah, and that also contributes to, like, why people keep secrets, mm-hmm. too. It's, like, going back to, like, the first secret we heard about the teacher and the relationship, it's, like, usually, like, in a situation where it's, like, oh, you like somebody, they might like you back. It's, like, say something. Mm-hmm. Like, do it, you mm-hmm. know? What are the consequences? But then you bring in this whole, like, social
mm-hmm.
situation, the whole, like, social hierarchy of, mm-hmm. like, teacher, student, older, we don't know how mm-hmm. much older, but hopefully not that much older, but, like, older, younger, like, the kind of power mm-hmm. thing. And that's what makes it complicated and juicy and interesting.
Right.
It's not that the actual, like, feelings or anything, but, like, the dynamics of which they are playing
in completely the
playground.
Yeah. And that's our show. I'm your host and the show's producer, Natalie Hahn. Tonight's stories were recorded, reported, and produced by Navani Rachumalu, Alvaro Basso, Stephanie Yen, Sophie Leheny, and yours truly, Natalie Hahn. The theme music for our show is Take Me Higher by Jazar. All music used is under Creative Commons license. For more information, visit our website at news.wprb.com. Can't get enough of WPRB News and Culture? Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, or online at news.wprb.com. WPRB News and Culture is produced in Princeton, New Jersey by WPRB 103.3 FM. Community supported, independent radio. Take care and enjoy your evening.